For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, your place to go for on-demand Titans coverage that is 100% free of the nonsense that we always see in sports talk these days. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of No Nonsense, Matthias Wadner and Will Lomas. Boy, do we have a game to recap for you. Guys, I think that was the most fun I have ever had at a football game. I mean, it's like seven lead changes in the second half. The Titans did what we knew sort of and maybe doubted but still kind of thought the Titans were capable of doing, which is showing up in a game, battling through, playing with good fundamentals, with good coaching, and beating a really good team. It was good to see all around, and it was a lot of fun. Everybody who bought a ticket to that game, and by the way, you know, you can have a conversation about, well, what percentage was Titans fans, what was Bills fans? Regardless, that is the fullest I have ever seen Nissan Stadium. And the first Titans game I ever went to was in 2011. And I've gone to a lot of games since then. I've gone to every game since like 2016. That's the fullest I've ever seen Nissan Stadium, easily.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't there, but it looked awesome. And it's just awesome to win a primetime game. These types of games are always really important to win, not only for the record, but also for the fans who go and they come away with one of the best memories, you know, that you could have as a football fan. So that's awesome for them, for those who went. But even for me, like, I could sense that this kind of felt like a playoff game. There are regular season games that just feel like playoff games, and I think this was definitely one of them, and it's awesome that the Titans were able to pull this out. It kind of reminded me a little of when they beat the Chiefs in the regular season. I think that was 2 years ago now, and just a huge win, really needed it, and the Titans have really cemented themselves in the AFC playoff picture and are going for more because they could definitely get one of the top seeds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this. I don't know if we predicted it or if we talked about, like, it would be a weird nightmare scenario, but week three, it was after the Colts-Titans game where the Titans won. We're talking about how the Titans could be sitting at 4-1 if they took care of business, and then how the Titans always play up to the teams like the Bills and the Chiefs, and how, you know, if we caught them sleeping, or, you know, even if not, if we were confident that the Titans could really beat anybody in the league. So it's not a surprise that they won. It is a little bit of a surprise that they started out so poorly. Like, you know, you talked about how loud, how full the stadium was and the experience and stuff. It was nuts. It was genuinely, like you said, the most people I've ever seen. Like, I've been a season ticket holder forever. So, you know, my family's had tickets forever. So, I mean, I've been to a lot of games, and, you know, the bridge after the game, everybody walking back, it just seemed like more people than I'd ever seen. The Bills fans were so loud, and then the Titans just held up in the red zone and forced two field goals. And then as soon as Derrick Henry popped his long run, it was truly the momentum shifted to the Titans fans in the stadium. And for the first time, maybe in memory for me, the Titans fans were loud and active on first down in the first quarter. you know, they didn't wait until it was third down and the team, you know, was in the red zone and they had to get a sack or else the game was over. Because too long, they've just kind of sat back and accepted that we're not going to cause any false starts. We're not going to be effective. Like, don't even worry about it. But this was the first time that they seemed to actually compete and be ready to yell with the other team. And that, I mean, that was exciting.
I think for me, a game like that is sort of a reminder of why I fell in love with NFL football growing up. I mean, the biggest stars are shining on the biggest stage. Derrick Henry played out of his mind. Josh Allen, though not spectacular, played well. Stephon Diggs showed up. Julio Jones showed up. Prime time, everyone's watching. A meaningful game between two good teams. And the game itself was entertaining, came down to the wire. I mean, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And I want to transition into getting into some analysis of this game. Let's do as the great Oscar Hammerstein wrote in The Sound of Music. Let's start at the very ending, and let's talk about... Oh, no, wait. I need... that didn't make any sense. I confused myself. I was thinking of something that's not The Sound of Music. And it was.
It's a good quote, though.
Well, start at the very beginning is the quote, not start at the very ending. Okay. Whew. I don't even know where to. I'm just going to leave that in there. I'm not going to cut all that out. Let's get into some analysis of this game. Let's start at the ending, the goal line stand. I talked to our analytics friend, Calvin Smith. He said that he thinks that the analytics pointed to going being the right choice there for Sean McDermott and the Bills. Jeffrey Simmons said that basically, or every time on film, that Josh Allen did the thing where he starts in the shotgun and then runs up to under center, that like every time they did that, it was a sneak, so the Titans knew what was coming. Well played, although Allen slipped, and I don't know that, you know, Simmons ended up having a whole lot to do with it, but I will say if Allen hadn't slipped, I think Simmons was in a good position to make the play. So guys, I guess just transitioning to that last drive, what did you think? What about the decision to not call a timeout from Vrabel? And it feels strange to live in a world where the Titans defense has the game on the line, and Vrabel and Ben Jones, who both talked about this, are both like, yeah, they're probably going to get it done.
Yeah, I personally probably would have used some of my timeouts just to give my offense a chance just in case the Bills would come away with a touchdown. But it worked out, so I guess we can't really fault the process too much. I think if the Bills would have ran a normal play, I don't really understand the decision to sneak there, because even if you get it, you still have to call a timeout, and you're going to have, like, what, 15 seconds or something like that to run a play in the end zone. I don't understand why they didn't just go for the end zone on fourth and one, but... I mean, it is what it is. The Titans benefited from it, and Vrabel was kind of justified in his actions, although I really don't know if the process is the right decision. I don't like what Vrabel did with his timeouts in this game, to be honest. Like, at the end of the half, I did get a couple comments because I thought the Titans really should have tried to use some of their timeouts before the first half ended. The Bills ran on like a 4-minute drive, I think, and the Titans could have used some of their timeouts towards the end of that drive just to preserve a little bit of time. And then once the Titans got the ball back, they still had 34 seconds, which with three timeouts, it's enough to get you into field goal range, especially when you have Tannehill and Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. But they decided not to use those timeouts. Some people mentioned that, you know, Batson had just gotten injured. They had a couple injuries. Caleb Farley, I think, had gotten injured also. So it's possible Mike Vrabel just wanted to go into halftime, regroup, and then come out ready to go for the second half. It kind of ended up working, but the Bills were getting the ball out of the halftime, so I wasn't too fond of that. And then at the end of the game, I also would have used some of those timeouts, but it is what it is. It worked out, and Vrabel comes out looking like one of the smarter coaches in the NFL, so good for him.
Yeah, I really don't have a problem going on the sneak there, because the Bills still had a timeout, and the way I figure it is it's 4th and inches, and you have 3 things that can happen. You can either get stopped, which is what happened. You can convert the first down and take a timeout, and then you have a couple of shots in the end zone, and then you can still kick the like 10-yard field goal. Or you can sneak and you hit a soft spot in the defense and you sneak all the way and you just score on that play. Because, I mean, they weren't, but on like the 2 or 3 yard line. So, I mean, they were right there. Like in the stands, that was my concern. Is I was like, I wish they would kick it for the Titans' sake. Because if you kick it to go to overtime, then you reset the ball game. The Titans have done well in overtime under Vrabel. That gives us the best chance compared to, you know, 4th down and inches with 1 timeout and 22 seconds left on the clock. So from that standpoint, I think he did the thing that was scariest to Titans fans. And I don't know if the stats back it up, because I don't know what the percentage of all those things are. But at the end of the day, you know, Luke, you talked about how Allen slipped and all that. I mean, yeah, like kind of, but there's the reason why he couldn't just take another step forward is because Simmons just absolute, like, not he was in good position. It looked like he was the offensive lineman sneaking. Like, he was so far underneath the pads of the offensive lineman, and he was wedging his way back there that the lineman might have well just not been there. Like, he just did not impact Simmons in any way. So, I think even if he didn't slip, Simmons was going to have him around the legs at that point anyway, and then it's can the other guys get in the way and stop it? And, you know, who knows at that point? But yeah, like I agree with you, Matias. I wish they would have used the timeouts in the first half after the Bills had scored, instead of running the ball, or even if you want to run the ball and then run a play action off of it and decide from there, but don't concede, you know, 54 seconds, I think, or something. It was somewhere in that area, and 3 timeouts. Like, you know, I guess it's because they hadn't been particularly hot throwing anybody yet, and that would come later in the game when Tannehill and A.J. Brown really, like, remembered what they did well. But I still would have liked to take some kind of, like, intermediate shots just to see if you could get in long field goal range.
The dumb part was not going for it. The dumb part was, A, not running an RPO or something that got Allen on the move. Also dumb was running right at Jeffrey Simmons. What were they thinking?
That's the problem to me. Like, yeah. you can run a quarterback. I mean, how often do quarterback sneaks fail? Like, historically, it's one of the most successful plays. You know, it's way more successful. Like, think about what Jacksonville did. I mean, it's that whole thing. Like, everybody criticized Urban Meyer because he wouldn't sneak Trevor Lawrence, and they had that whole post-game press conference thing because they handed it off. So you got to think the Bills are watching a game that where last week they just absolutely messed up that call, if we're talking about Jacksonville, and they did the opposite. So why not sneak it? And then it turns out, oh, sneak it to the right and not the left, or do something else, because you're not going to sneak. How many times have we seen Jeffrey Simmons get a 4th down stop? Like, it's got to be almost double digits at this point, right? Like, I mean, he's been incredible on short down and distances.
Allen didn't even make it back to his center.
No, because, like, the whole line got pushed back.
It was not good execution, not a great play call, I didn't think. Let's talk about the moments that led to that. Because in the first half, or really the first quarter, wasn't great for the Titans. The game was a bit of a snooze fest. I think Buffalo went up 6-0. And then all of a sudden, Derrick Henry has the 76-yard touchdown run, and it immediately felt like a different game, because when he's going, it's hard to beat the Titans. It really is. And everything else finally started to click. A.J. Brown, who had one catch, if that, I think, with like 7 minutes to go in the first half, ends up with his best game of the season, a 90-plus yard performance. Henry continued to dominate, scoring 3 touchdowns. Tannehill, to an extent, settled down. I couldn't believe it. He didn't get sacked. The offensive line was stellar. He had a pocket to throw from. Just an all-around good performance from the Titans. It's usually very cliche and like team talking points when people at press conferences are like, this was a complete team win. But when Tannehill said that last night, I just start nodding. I'm like, yep, that's it. That's what happened.
Yeah, no one really, you know, caused the Titans to possibly lose this game. I think maybe Janoris Jenkins, because he had a couple of really bad plays.
He caused that Beasley touchdown.
Yeah, and he also got, I mean, I'm not going to fault him too much for getting beat by Stephen Diggs. That guy's a stud, so I don't want to blame him all that much for that, but it seems like the Beasley touchdown was completely on him, and I mean, they went over it on the broadcast, and it did seem like it was his responsibility. And then I think he got chewed out by Anthony Midgett, the defensive backs coach. So it was definitely on him. But yeah, the offensive line played well. The Bills did get some pressure on Tannehill, but Tannehill did very well to escape or, you know, just maneuver around in the pocket and kind of throw off a different platform. I didn't think he played well in the first half. I thought he played pretty well in the second half. So he kind of saved his day a little bit. Honestly, just getting the ball to A.J. Brown was one of the bigger improvements that the Titans made in the second half, just starting to get that play action going. I mean, that play action where, you know, obviously fake it to Henry and then get A.J. Brown or any receiver really going on a slant or crosser across the middle, it's undefeated. Like, it works almost every time. It's crazy. I don't know how. But getting back to that was huge because that's like been a staple of the Titans offense for the past couple of seasons. And getting back to that in the second half was a key reason that the Titans were able to get back on track and just outscore the Bills in the second half. So that was really good to see.
Yeah, it does sort of seem like the Titans have two or three unstoppable plays. Like, it feels like designed cutbacks with Henry are unstoppable. That sort of outside zone play action with like the slant route from A.J. Brown or to A.J. Brown feels almost unstoppable. And then the Tannehill, Derrick Henry quarterback read, like those all
that,
just seem
that's
like
the
plays
money
that
play
work.
Right there. The zone read.
Yeah, it's like you could convince me that there's a world where they run those three plays, you know, a couple of times each on a drive and they score almost every time, because there's really no way to effectively stop those. Like, if you're going to try to stop the outside zone, that's where the play action comes from. If you're going to try to, you know, play tentative, that's where the cutback comes from. It's like if they get in short down and distances, that's where the read option comes from. So it's like, you know, they seem to have these trump cards, and I'm assuming, you know, they know just as well as we do how effective they are. And that's why they save them for key situations. But man, like it sure seemed like once they let Tannehill kind of go more up tempo and, you know, play more, you know, do more of the aggressive play action stuff in the fourth quarter when he went 9 for 9, like there was a lot of the old school stuff that we haven't seen Downing call, but we've seen Arthur Smith call. So I don't know how much of that was Tannehill pushing for like, let's do this because they're crowding the box and I know it'll work or whatever, but whatever that was, bottle it up and use it from here on out.
It's a game where so much went right, I guess, that I almost wanted to ask Vrabel after the game, like how did you win? Like, I was just curious as to what he would say looking back. And let's contextualize this, guys, because we were talking last week. I talked all week about this. I wrote about it in my column for the week about how this game was going to, one way or the other, reset our expectations for the Titans because they had the clunkers against the Jets and the Cardinals, the unconvincing wins against the Colts and the Jags, The Seattle game was nice, but it was a bit of an outlier. And we were sitting here going, are they any good? Is the Seattle game indicative of who they really are? Is the whole Mike Vrabel Titans struggle against bad teams and then rise to the occasion against the good ones, is that still in effect? And it is. And so now, I think as we look at this team and look at their potential for the rest of the season, before the year we talked about these guys as shoe-in division champions who, with a healthy Julio Jones, can go on a playoff run. That's still who they are, no? Now, I don't want to fall in this trap of, man, they beat the Bills, Super Bowl bound. Like, no, I'm not overreacting to one win. This one win is confirming what we sort of were already thinking. Like, this is a classic Vrabel Titans team that, in a lot of ways, is better than they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overreact either, but I mean, the fact that they can beat the Bills, I mean, they showed it last year, but the Bills came into this game looking like possibly the best team in the NFL, and the Titans went toe-to-toe with them. They showed that they can beat them, and they did it in, I thought it was a pretty convincing way, because I thought the defense played rather well. I know it's kind of crazy to say for a team that gave up 31 points, but the Bills are one of the most high-powered offenses in the league, and they did come into this game not great in red zone touchdown percentage, and the Titans did very well in terms of red zone defense, and that was a key to this win. So I thought the Titans came out of this very convincingly. I feel better about them. I do still think they're very prone to, you know, like you said, a stinker, because they've shown to be that kind of team in the past. But they can beat any team, and I think when you can do that, you can be a Super Bowl contender, just because you've shown the ability to beat these teams that are among the best in the NFL. And I mean, we'll see what happens this next week. I think the injuries might catch up to them this week, but if this team is fully healthy, they're obviously going to make the playoffs, but they're going to make a pretty nice run, I think, deep into the playoffs, which is crazy for me to say, because I'm usually the most negative person here, I think.
So what's the, you know, there was some tweet that was going around earlier in the off season where I think it was Daniel Jeremiah was the one who did it, where it was like, this is what you, looking back over the last 10 years, this is what you have to have to win a championship. And it was like, you need to have two defensive players playing at a high level in the front seven, one defensive back playing at a high level, you know, then one receiving threat, like one elite receiving threat, one elite other offensive weapon, whether it's tight end or running back, and a good quarterback, and then, you know, some other things. And, you know, you think about that, and the Titans have deficiencies. Like, there's places where they need more out of certain guys or whatever, but they also do seem to have really good, you know, superstar-ish type players at almost every position across the board. So, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about it specifically or not, but you look at Harold Landry and how good he's been, and you look at Jeffrey Simmons, and you're like, yeah, like, it would not shock me if those two guys just took over a game, and they, you know, they combined for three sacks yesterday and a goal line stop on fourth down. So maybe that was the game that they took over. But, you know, they're both good, high impact players. When Fulton's back, he's a high impact player. We saw a, you know, sickly AJ Brown and a slightly banged up Julio Jones come back, and, you know, they both contributed. I think they combined for three explosive plays of 20 or more receiving yards. They all seem like when they're on the field, they can be these impact players, and they can do what we've thought they could do. Like, I mean, they're beating good teams. They beat Seattle in Seattle at home. That's a hard thing to do, even if Seattle's, you know, not the team that they've always been. They beat the Colts in a division game, and they beat them handily. And now the Colts, I think, have won two of their last three, and they went to overtime with the Ravens. So, you know, it's not like it's an 0-6 team there. Like, they've shown up when they've needed to show up. But again, it's just the old Mike Vrabel thing. Mike Vrabel's whole thing, and we talk about it every year, and we call it ahead of time, and then, you know, we look back on it and say we're right, but he just cannot get the guys motivated to go, you know, win against bad teams, and he somehow gets them up and gets them ready when they're considered underdogs. Like, that's his whole life.
Here's something I want to ask you guys about, because as I was thinking today, like, going into yesterday's game, it was one of those games where I knew what I was going to write, whatever the outcome. If they lost it, it was a disaster. What I was going to write is, hey, these guys just aren't very good. It's time to start thinking about building for next year, even though they're probably going to make the playoffs in a bad division. If they won, or if it was close, it was, hey, they actually are pretty good. Keep an eye out. Ended up being the latter. We know so well what a Mike Vrabel Titans team is. What are you looking, I guess, over the rest of the season, guys, to learn about this team? Because, frankly, I don't know what the takeaway is if they beat the Chiefs on Sunday, for example.
The takeaway for me would be that they're a very good team.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just thinking, like, last night on the way home, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, like, if this is a Madden franchise, you just hit sim to playoffs at this point. Like, it's, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They actually, I was looking, Mike Clay came out with rest of season strength of schedule, and I think the Titans have, like, the third easiest in the entire league. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. I think it would be a cataclysmic disaster. Well, I mean, injury to the quarterback or the running back.
I think even if Henry gets hurt, they're still in the playoffs.
Hey, yeah. Let's not play this game.
Yeah, let's not do this. Let's not do this. But
let's keep moving.
That aside, if everyone stays healthy and whatever, they're obviously going to make the playoffs. And like, I'm not sold on any other team in the AFC, to be honest with you. Like, I think the Ravens are good, but the Titans have shown that they know how to defend Lamar Jackson for the most part. And if the offense keeps improving, I think they could attack the Ravens defense pretty well. The Chargers might be a little fraudulent, to be honest with you. They got absolutely crushed by the Ravens. That defense isn't looking all that great. They already beat the Bills. The Chiefs have a horrific defense that did play well this last week, but they have been really bad for the entire season. So I don't know. Like, they're right in it, like with the best of the AFC. So I mean, I feel good going forward. And in terms of what I want to see from them, I guess as this regular season goes on, I'm just interested by the defense, because I've been critical of them throughout the season, but I've liked a lot of the things that they've done over the past couple of weeks, especially in this Bills game. I'm really impressed by the pass rush. They keep getting home. I mean, they sacked Josh Allen three times, and a couple of those, or maybe all three, came at like very opportune times, which is something that we just haven't been able to have in the past. So seeing the defense play rather well, and if they could just keep eliminating these coverage busts that just keep happening, but they seem to be happening due to, you know, the players and not even the scheme. So I'm interested in that. If they could keep that up, I'm going to feel even more confident going into the stretch run and into the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, there's only one team with a clearly better record, like you kind of hinted at, and that's the Ravens. It, just in terms of the AFC, like, everybody else at the top is 4-2. So, you know, like, strength of schedule, whatever. Like, the fact is that the team, the Titans, if they beat the Bills and the Chiefs, will have shown that they're capable of beating any team in the NFL. And anything less than a win is going to be a failure of coaching, or the other team just has some distinct advantage that the Titans can't beat. Because, you know, what are the, if you combine the Bills and the Chiefs, what are they lacking? I mean, the Bills came in with a number one defense, number one scoring defense, and number one scoring offense in the NFL, and the Titans beat them. So you could argue that they simultaneously showed that they could beat the best offense and the best defense in the league. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not, there's no excuses for losing any more games. It's that if they're properly motivated and if they have a good game plan in place, that you should kind of assume that they're going to be able to win the game. Like, at the very least, they should be in a competitive spot late. So, yeah, I mean, they're 4-2 now. They've got a pretty tough three-game stretch or so after this. They've got the Chiefs next, obviously, and then after that, they've got the Colts on the road and the Rams on the road and then the Saints at home. That's a tough stretch. You know, I don't know if the Saints are necessarily the same dangerous team that they always have been, but that doesn't always matter for the Titans. But the point is, if you're 4-2 and you come out of that stretch 6-4, you know, and you beat the Colts in that time, you know, 6-4 with Houston still in the schedule twice, Jacksonville in the schedule, the Patriots, the Dolphins, who look terrible. Like, you know, it's never easy to get to double-digit wins, but 10 wins makes sense. And then at a certain point, you're just playing for seeding. So, you know, this team should be playoff bound. They're talented enough. They've got the right sort of division. And then at that point, it's can you win 4 games? Can you win 3 games? You know, depending on whether you get the bye or whatever. And, you know, if they beat Kansas City, there's no reason why they shouldn't be competitive for the bye, you know, from here on out. So I guess we'll see. But, I mean, this is a talented team. And I think if they beat the Chiefs, like you kind of said, what would happen then? I think that would have to be the story.
You know,
yeah.
Have we, in a way, matured in how we evaluate this team? Not necessarily us as, like, reporters, but again, we know this. We know Mike Vrabel so well at this point that our reaction after the Jets game was not, man, they suck. What happened? It was, yeah, that's kind of what they do. See you in a couple weeks against the Bills. We'll see what happens. They're so predictable.
Well, the same thing happened for the Seahawks game. No one thought they were going to win, and we were like,
"The win yesterday."
This is what they do.
Someone was like, yeah. "Oh, what?" I'm like, "These are the games they win. Come on."
Yeah, I mean, you can't, like, heaven forbid if the Chiefs open at like a 4.5 favorite. Like, I know, I think they were a 4-point favorite before the Titans game, but if you give Vrabel a 4.5-point thing to put on the wall and say, "Hey, nobody's ever believed in you. All the cameras are here to see other people." Like, I mean, he'll beat that speech into the ground. Like, he knows it back and forth, and it works for whatever reason. So, you know, they're just properly motivated. What I would say, I think we've all kind of matured in different directions, because at this point, Mike Vrabel is a Rorschach test. You kind of see what you're going to see, because he's not changing. So after that, it's just what's your interpretation of what you're seeing. So that's what I would say.
This game was big. This was a big win. If they beat the Chiefs, like, they're going to be in a really good spot. I think it's crucial for them to have home field advantage in the playoffs. I don't know if that's either getting the bye or even the 2 seed. Like, that's huge, man, because I really do feel like they play a lot better at home.
They do.
Than they do on the road. They do, yeah. Even though, like, week one was a disaster, but first of all, the Cardinals might be incredibly good, and I also think that was kind of a fluke. Like, I don't think that will ever happen.
I remember my first year with A to Z writing a story about home field advantage and talking to Byard and Brian Rakpo, and my takeaway from that is you have a home field advantage even if it's silent, because, like, you don't have to travel, you sleep in, you know, your own bed the night before, you know, there's a comfort level to that, and I think you're on to something. And I think they have a shot to get the number one seed. I don't predict they'll get it, because I think they're too inconsistent to have the record at the end of the season that you need to get one of those or to get that top seed. But they'll win the division. They'll host a playoff game. I want to talk about Derrick Henry briefly. We don't need to spend 20 minutes talking about, oh, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. We know that. That's not new information. Who other than him is MVP right now? He is. It's not that he's dragging the Titans, because the Titans are a well-built team.
and are coached well. But he's their lifeblood.
Yeah. I don't know. Kyler, maybe.
I mean, I think that makes sense because he's playing exceptional and they're 6-0.
Yeah, and I think Josh Allen was definitely, I mean, he still is a contender because he played really well in this Titans game, but this one might ding him. I don't know. I don't think they would give it to a running back just because they haven't done so in I don't even remember the last running back to win MVP. Oh, Peterson, yeah, that's true. But I mean, Derrick Henry is on pace to have an even better season than that. And I mean, he's on pace to have the best season ever, the best running back season ever, and possibly one of the greatest offensive seasons, period. It's insane.
The thing I go back to with that Adrian Peterson season to compare the two is Adrian Peterson's quarterback was Christian Ponder and his number one receiver was Jerome Simpson. The defense knew every play what was coming and they still had no shot. Derrick Henry does have the benefit of a good quarterback and a good wide receiver whenever one of the two of them is healthy, but I don't think that should be counted against him necessarily.
No, and also, they still stack the box against Henry very often. Like, he's consistently facing, like, 8-man boxes, and it just does not matter. I don't have the stats for it, but I feel like he's actually better against stacked boxes. I don't know how, but that's just how it works.
Yeah, I don't want to dive too deep into, like, how good is Derrick Henry, because, like you said, we've talked about it before, but, yeah, I mean, he's incredible. Like, you know, it's crazy. He only rushed the ball 20 times last night. Like, it feels like he ran it 40 times, right? Like, he averaged 7.2 yards per carry, and he only had 20 carries. Like, he caught three passes, maybe two passes, but he only carried the ball 20 times. Like, that's got to be his lowest attempts all year. And he had 143 yards, including a 76-yarder and three touchdowns. So, I mean, the only person who I can see looking over it right now who has a good argument for somebody who's making more of an impact is Tom Brady in Tampa. Like, people aren't talking about it because, you know, Tom Brady just kind of is what he is in terms of, you know, he's going to be put up MVP numbers that just does somebody beat him. But, I mean, he's on pace to throw for 5,800 yards and, let's see, like almost 50 touchdowns.
He's got 17
touchdowns. Yeah, like the games aren't really competitive. Like, I mean, they're winning at such a high clip that it's like, you know, they beat the Cowboys, who look great. You know, they lost to the Rams in LA. That happens. But, I mean, really no other game has been competitive. 48 points against the Falcons. They beat the Patriots in that emotional game when everything seemed like it wasn't going well for them. They beat the Dolphins by like 30-something points. I mean, the Eagles came back to make it look respectable, and then they kind of have cakewalks. Like, they've got the Bears defense, which is good but not great, and then, I mean, they play the Giants, the Colts, Washington looks terrible. They play the Falcons again. Like, he's going to put up a million yards. So, like, I mean, it's his if he wants it, but I think that the defining trait or defining qualifier, I guess is what I should say, of Derrick Henry's MVP run this year is that you have to say, okay, he got snubbed in 2020 because it's a quarterback award. We're going to give y'all one more shot to recognize how great he is. After that, we're just going to assume that this is just a quarterback award and not truly the MVP award. That's the only way you can qualify. Say, like, look, maybe you missed it, but he rushed for 2,000 yards last year. We're going to give you another shot because he's going to do it again, and he's also going to have 30 touchdowns or something close to that. So, you know, if you don't recognize it now, just be prepared for everybody to acknowledge that this trophy is a joke.
I need to get negative now. We've given the win its due credit. I need to get negative about Julio Jones. Let me say this. When he has been out there, it has been as advertised. It has been Julio Jones, the many-time Pro Bowl and All-Pro receiver that the Titans thought they were trading for. But a lot of times he's not out there. And that's a problem. And look, the whole team's hurt, and we'll get into the injury list momentarily. But, and this isn't like an attack on anyone. It's not me saying they need to do a better job of getting these guys prepared, because I think that's a stupid take. Or Julio Jones needs to be tougher, because that's equally stupid. I am just pointing out the fact that this cannot keep up. Like, this is bad. Julio's great, but it can't be easy on the coaching staff when your best player on the perimeter is in and out and in and out and unreliable in terms of his availability. And look, they want to talk about availability is the best ability, and that's why they like Marcus Johnson so much, because he was there in training camp. I want to see that same energy directed at Julio Jones, who has barely been available this year. He's played 2.5 games, basically. And again, this isn't an indictment on Julio Jones. I'm not saying there's anything he needs to be doing better. I'm just saying that this is a problem. And I asked Vrabel today, I'm like, when your great players who you game plan around go out, like, doesn't that sort of put a fork in the road in terms of the game plan? I mean, it's one thing if, you know, I don't know, like Taylor Lewan goes down, it's a big blow, but you just put in the new left tackle and you move on. But when someone that you are designing a scheme around, and Vrabel said, he said that for the most part it was business as usual, but they did have to scrap a few plays when Julio Jones went out. And I don't like that. Like, that's not something that needs to be common, you know?
Yes, it's frustrating, but I think this was a very real risk that the Titans took. Like, they knew that last year Julio Jones had dealt with hamstring injuries in particular, and it kept him out of a lot of games, and he kept coming in and out of games. And I think the same thing might have happened in 2019 also. This kind of just came with the territory, that this was a real possibility that he's getting older, he might need a little bit more management, and these soft tissue things might pop up. And yes, it's frustrating, but I think the Titans took that chance knowing very well that this was a possibility. And unfortunately, it's coming true. But they acquired him to go win a Super Bowl. So as long as he's healthy for the stretch run and the playoffs, we're not even gonna talk about this at that point. But yes, it is frustrating, and it does put a dent in the Titans' offensive ceiling, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it sucks when players are injured. I don't know. I mean, I guess the question is he worth the risk to have? Like, because, I mean, like you said, when he's on the field, he's good. I think he has 6 15-yard or more reception, like 6 receptions that went for more than 15 yards this year. I think 3 of them went for more than 25, and then 2 of them have gone for 50. So, I mean, that's pretty good for only seeing the field for what he saw. But yeah, like the question is it worth, you know, let's say he plays 12 games this year, and then he spends 5 on the bench, and then they have him for the playoffs. Is it worth the risk? And I mean, to me, the answer is yeah. Like, you don't get a guy like Matias said, you don't get a guy like Julio Jones because you want to go from winning 11 regular season games to 12. You get it because last year when Corey Davis, you know, went down, you didn't have any other options, and now you've added, you know, Marcus Johnson, who they love, Chester Rogers, who they like, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, who they were force-feeding, who did well last night, A.J. Brown, and Julio Jones. So you hope that you've got that elite top end, and then you try to support underneath with a whole new group of supporting cast guys. And so, like, I think that's the move, you know. And you just expect him, once he gets to the playoffs, to, you know, last night he came out in the fourth quarter because of a hamstring thing that Mike Vrabel said today was day-to-day. I'm going to assume that he would have gone back in if that was a playoff game. If nothing else, then to be a decoy and draw attention and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, like, I mean, you'd love everybody to be fully healthy and play 17 games.
I'm going to respond to that. The whole – because that's what we were hearing – from a lot of fans ahead of the Jets and Jacksonville game. It's, well, they're probably just holding them out because the teams aren't very good and they're saving him for Buffalo. I get the logic, but then I don't. Like, at a certain point, don't you just have to play your guys?
Yeah, but that points to the playoffs.
I don't know, man. Like, you talk about we got to go 1-0 every week and then you're not going full throttle.
Well... yeah, because they're liars. They don't have to go 1-0 every week. They know that. Like, I'm pretty sure they're aware of the rest of their division, and they're not like, oh man, if we don't go 1-0 every week and win, I mean, they know the deal. They know what they have to say. You know, listen to Derrick Henry after every game, and he'll compliment the other team that he just ran on for 120 yards. Like, they've all been schooled on what to say. That is the height of nonsense. You know, that is what we are trying to stop. So, you know, yeah, like, okay, go 1-0 every week. That sounds awesome. But let's be real here. Like, this is not a team that's desperate to get to the playoffs. This is a team that's desperate to win in the playoffs. So, you know, it's awfully convenient that everybody was like, wow, I bet these guys will be healthy for Buffalo and Kansas City. And they were. And then they, you know, they were both contributors. So
last,
I don't know.
Last like, point on this. Is there not a point where he has to get in rhythm with Tannehill and Henry and A.J. Brown? Or do you just expect that, you know, when January rolls around, that it's just you flip a switch and, all right, everything's great?
Well, they haven't looked out of rhythm.
They haven't looked
of
in it,
one.
Though.
Yeah, that was...
Seattle
game.
Yeah, Seattle. He was great. I mean,
they were in sync.
He had six. He has six receptions for 15 plus yards. Three of those went for 25 or longer. Maybe it's 22 or longer. And then two went for 50. Like, you know, that feels like a lot. Like, I don't know with how rare it is for this offense to pass it all anyway. Like that feels like a lot of chemistry that they built. But yeah, specifically Seattle and. Indianapolis when AJ went out early, like that was the passing game for the first, you know, half or, you know, right over half.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we are going to look ahead a little bit. We're going to talk about the injury list, the pile up there, and we will preview the Kansas City Chiefs. You are listening to No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. The injuries are piling up for the Tennessee Titans. It's beyond Julio Jones. He's probably, honestly, the least concerning of all of these. Just last night, or Monday night, whenever you're listening to this, Julio Jones, hamstring. Taylor Lewan, at first looked like he might be in deep peril, turns out to be a concussion. Caleb Farley, torn ACL. Cameron Batson, torn ACL. Chris Jackson, foot injury. There was another one, no? Am I forgetting one?
Who did you say? Did you say Lewan, Batson?
Yeah, Lewan, Batson, Farley. Jackson, Farley. Julio. Well, I think that what's happening is there's just so many each game that it's hard to keep track of which happened when.
Maybe Fulton.
Since the last time.
Well, Fulton was last week, and he's out for another two games at least. Hooker got back. That was good. Vrabel said today he thought he played well, thought he was prepared.
Kern's coming back.
Who?
Brett Kern.
Yeah, okay. It's a problem. And look, I'm all about next man up. I'm all about, you know, we'll put 22 out there and go get a win. Because I think that's the mentality that you have. And Mike Vrabel is right whenever he talks about, you know, the NFL has a 100% injury rate. But good night. At a certain point, you just run out of juice. I mean, the Titans are going to go they're home, but they're going to play the Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to take on Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and who's their other receiver?
Mecole Hardman.
Mecole Hardman with the likes of Jack Rabbit Jenkins, who I thought PFT commenter hilariously pointed out yesterday, sounds like a cowboy whose plans always get foiled. Jack Rabbit Jenkins, Elijah Molden, and Chris Jones and Brian Buddy Calhoun and Breon Borders. Breon Borders, who by the way, like has zero ball skills, none. Zero awareness when the football is in the air. Like this is a get right type of game for Patrick Mahomes if you're looking at this on the surface.
Well, he has been right. That's why it's even more concerning.
He's been turning the ball over more than he usually does.
Yes, that is true. Although a couple of them have been directly
Tyreek
Hill's fault. Just like lateraling teleports the ball. Yeah, to the defense. It's very weird. Mahomes is going to throw the ball all over the Titans defense. I don't really have any doubts about that. And yes, I am concerned about the injuries to the cornerbacks in particular, just because, like you said, some of those guys who are very not good and their backups, they're going to play. So, I mean, it's going to be up to Shane Bowen to just put his guys in positions to not mess up. if that makes any sense, just like keep everything in front of you. Don't get beat deep and just settle down in the red zone, which is kind of what the Titans' plan was against the Bills. Unfortunately, they had a couple of cracks, like we talked about with that Cole Beasley miscommunication, and then Stephon Diggs got open for another touchdown, and Manny Sanders had a catch late that was pretty deep as well. But they did a really good job, especially in the red zone, once the offense got there, just kind of settling down and either forcing them to get a field goal or whatever. If the Titans could do that, then they should be able to not control this game, but be in it for the duration of it. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be up to the coaching staff to just put their defensive cornerbacks that are left in a position to just win. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what they can cook up. I do think they've done a rather good job over the past couple of weeks, and I think they did a good job in the Bills game. Once all these injuries were happening, guys were just getting put into situations that they shouldn't have been put into, and they did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, and one thing that kind of stands out is it's not like Mahomes' interceptions are going to like top-end corners. He has one that got picked off by Gregory Rousseau, which was directly his fault. And then he has one that was picked off by Bobby McCain. Like, you know, there's a lot of times where it's his wide receivers not doing their job, like we talked about with Tyreek Hill, and they basically just miss the ball, and it goes behind them, and it gets tipped up, you know, that nightmare scenario. And that's kind of the Titans' bread and butter. Like, they seem to not mind if you catch the ball. Like they don't care. What they really hope you do is you let one go high and you don't secure it, or it gets tipped at the line and picked, or, you know, that's it hangs in the air too long. Like, they're not really interested in playing tight man coverage across the field. They want to get, you know, tips and balls that shoot straight up in the air, and that's kind of what they play for. Like, there was a pass that Josh Allen threw last night where it was I mean, I know the DeNico Autry hit that turned into an interception, but there was another one where it got popped straight up in the air, and Allen had to run and jump and knock it down.
Bud Dupree.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Dupree knocked it up. Yeah, and then it was almost an interception there, and so it's like that. That's something that Jeffrey Simmons has also done a lot of, like tipped passes straight up. Harold Landry's done that too. Like, you know, so that's kind of something that the Titans do well. So that helps. But, yeah, I mean, the good news is it doesn't matter who you have at corner. If Patrick Mahomes is playing well, it's tough. Like, they're not going to cover those guys. Like, you've just got to hope to be able to score with them and be opportunistic. So, you know, it almost doesn't really matter, as weird as it sounds. Like, as long as your guy just doesn't completely blow coverage, and that's kind of what the safeties are for. But, yeah, like, I don't feel any more confident necessarily than I would if any of those other corners were healthy except for Fulton.
I just know we're going to be seeing a lot of zone over the next few weeks, because we saw a lot of it on Monday night, probably the most I can ever remember from a Vrabel Titans game. And it's smart, because you don't have the personnel to match up one-on-one with guys. You know, now you go back, like, I'm not even going to criticize them for the off coverage anymore, unless it's just blatant. You know, it's third and four and they're playing 11 yards off or something. Because, like, the goal now is just don't get beat, because you don't have the personnel to jam and be physical and to challenge guys. You just try to set the quarterback up to fail with your zone coverage.
Yeah.
Which, that kind of makes sense, right? Because they were already accidentally doing that with their man coverage, is they already didn't know how to play that. So, like, you might as well concede the thing you can't do anyway.
I do not know how to play man coverage. It's the...
You play for Mike Vrabel for 1 year, and it seems to just completely leave your brain.
I mean, there doesn't seem to be, like, a whole lot of schematic learning there. I mean, maybe, obviously, technique, but, hey, get your guy on this play. That's the coaching.
Yeah,
that's the scheme.
It should be.
What do we think about this game, guys? I'm having trouble. Like, I was pretty confident about the Titans versus the Bills. I don't know how I feel, because... You know, we're used to them following up good performances with duds, but we're also used to them playing well against good teams. It's like there's a bit of some dissonance there.
Yeah, I think the Titans are going to be able to move the ball in this game. I think the Chiefs will also move the ball a lot. I don't know. I mean, I can see it going either way. I think being at home is a pretty big plus, and I think it gives the Titans a better chance to win than if it was at Arrowhead. I don't know. I don't know if I love the matchup, given all the Titans' injuries at cornerback against Patrick Mahomes. I mean, and you said we're probably going to play a lot of zone, which is probably true. But, I mean, against Travis Kelce, who just eats zone alive, and Tyreek Hill, who could find pockets of space and then just does so much after the catch, it's tough. It's going to be really tough. Like I said, the red zone defense is going to have to be stellar, like it was in the Buffalo Bills game. And I think if it is, they'll give themselves a chance. But, I mean, the Titans always have a chance, especially against a defense like the Chiefs that just gives up so many big plays. Particularly in the run game, I mean, Derrick Henry's going to just destroy them, because their linebackers just are not good at all. They probably have some of the worst linebacker play in the entire NFL. So Derrick Henry's going to eat. And if Julio is healthy, I mean, Julio and A.J. Brown should have good games. The Chiefs just, they're not good on defense, man. I know they played well against Washington, but Tyler Heinicke, he's been found out. Like, he is. He's
that organization's a freaking joke, man.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it like that, but yes, they have been a disaster this
year.
Sean
Taylor stuff. I mean, was that someone stopped the nonsense?
No, but we should talk about it.
I mean, the fact that
did you guys see the Jackson Mahomes thing? By the way,
yeah, that's
wow. Up. That was bad.
Yeah, that whole, like, he's sort of the worst. Like, people should hate him. Like, I don't understand that at all. He's, like, notoriously the worst.
I don't know why. They claim it's not a publicity stunt to retire Sean Taylor's jersey number, but, like, Sean Taylor's a franchise legend. Obviously, his life has ended entirely too soon. And you make the decision to retire his jersey number in the middle of week 6 and then do it promptly, like, 4 days later? Like, what is this, a funeral where you have to act quickly?
Super random. Super weird.
And like,
well, I can't think anything else.
Washington.
Yeah, I can't think of any reason why they would have done that. Like, there's no reason to expedite it, right?
I can't eat. Like, there was a tweet where it pointed out, like, you know, the owner was in a hoodie when he met with the family. And, like, the ceremony was very, like, underdone.
Well, the, like, this, the road or whatever that they named after him, like, was, like, it had porta potties behind it.
Yeah.
Like, it was not roped off as some, like, venue to, like, take pictures at. It was just his family standing in front of us, some porta potties. Like, it's insane. Like, there, I mean, Washington is just a terrible franchise. But I'm going to go back to the Kansas City Chiefs game while it's fresh in my mind. I just looked it up. Their Kansas City's defense is fifth worst in points allowed. Their bottom eight in rushing yards allowed and passing yards allowed. So basically, no matter what you want to do, and I mean, like you said, like they didn't play any tough. Like they did play some tough teams. Sorry, I shouldn't say it like that. But it's not like they've exclusively played tough teams. I mean, they played the Eagles. They played Washington this past week. Like, I mean, the Chargers are tough. I get that. Like, the Ravens are tough. I get that. The Browns are tough. I get that. But it's like, put forth some effort. Like, it's I don't know. Like, their defense is bad. So, you know, I mean, this game is probably going to turn out to be which team gets the most turnovers and who has the ball last. Like, it's all going to be situational football because it should be really easy to move the ball between the 20s. It's just, can you make, you know, the Chiefs who've turned the ball over since week two, they've turned it over twice in week two, four times in week three, once in week four, four times in week five, three times last week. Like, they are just not an efficient team, and they're with their backup running back and Clyde Edwards-Helaire being out. And, you know, that, like, I don't know. Like, this is a much worse Kansas City Chiefs team than the one they played a few years ago when the Titans beat them at home.
Yeah, it's true. And also, Tyreek Hill's a little banged up. He's got a quad injury, even though he toughed through it last week. And Kelce got kind of banged up late. He came back in the game, but I think he hurt his shoulder or his hand maybe. So, like, they're kind of banged up too coming into this one. So,
also, while we're talking about banged up hands, I forgot to mention that Joe Tooney, their guard, is playing with, like, a broken hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's cool. Like, that's cute against Washington, who's got a terrible defense this year. You don't want that against Jeffrey Simmons. Like, you know, it takes four hands to stop him on good days. So, I don't know.
Is there anything else about that Buffalo game that we didn't talk about? I feel like there was just so much. I think we got to everything.
Byard had a great game.
Byard playing very well this year. Danico Autry, Harold Landry, all playing exceptionally well. Landry is taking that step that you know.
Yes.
I was pretty negative about Harold Landry throughout last season. This is what I wanted. This is what I was saying I need to see from Harold Landry before I buy in. And I'm seeing it, and I'm bought in now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been third in the NFL in sacks. So, like, that's all good. Like, I mean, I'm not here to, like, toot my horn too much about that. Like, everybody knows I'm a Harold Landry guy. But, I mean, let's talk about Danico Autry for just a second. Because, like you said, I mean, he's making the plays that people don't really see. Like, everybody remembers that.
I think you can see it. Like, I'm watching that game last night in the stadium, and I'm seeing that guy disrupt constantly.
Yeah, it's like it goes down as a quarterback hit, but it turned into an interception by Kevin Byard, which turned into a touchdown by Derrick Henry. Like, it's almost like a second assist in hockey where it's like nobody credits you for setting it up because it's, you know, the highlight is this guy in this play, but really he did the stuff. And, you know, he's doing that consistently now. So I remember people week one were upset that Laurel Murchison was getting snaps ahead of him, and Murchison was good before he got hurt. Like, this is no shot at Murchison, but Autry's just been exceptionally good. And for all the hate and, you know, slander that Bud Dupree's getting as he kind of rounds back into shape, Danico Autry's picked up plenty of that slack. So, you know, if you're looking for an off-season, you know, pass rush addition, just focus on Autry. You'll be pleasantly surprised if you haven't already.
Autry, Vrabel had a great quote about Autry yesterday. He got asked about him, and he said, man, that guy's fun to coach. It was just a really sort of sweet moment, I thought.
Yeah, he's great. I can't remember the last time the Titans have played this well on the defensive line. Like, they are crushing.
They're disruptive.
Much most of it. Yes, and all of them. Like, even Tyler Tard is out there getting quarterback hits, which is not something, like, he's supposed to do. Bud Dupree is still, you know, shaping in a form, but once he gets going, add him to these other players who are just playing really well. Even Amani Bledsoe was making plays yesterday. Like, it's crazy, which is just, it's just not something we have seen for the past couple of seasons, and it's awesome.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Stomp the Nonsense, and this is going to be a good one. I think we all have a lot of ammunition, including something that happened on Fox Sports 1 Tuesday morning that I think we are all privy to, but we are obligated to talk about nonetheless. Stop the Nonsense coming up. All right, folks. Lots of ammunition for this one. I've got a few things I want to talk about. Who would like to start?
I mean, I started the past few times, but I can
start. That's fine.
I just don't want to take the time, so y'all can definitely go first if you'd like.
So, first of all, very funny headline at the Titans Wire last week. It was a piece about Jalen Fly Sadler, the offensive lineman that's been standing outside the Titans facility holding a sign. He got an opportunity to play at some camp or to work out at some football camp, and the headline simply said, Jalen Fly Sadler gets shot at football camp. And Matthias and I both read the story. Like, I was horrified. I'm like, oh no, like, he's such a nice guy, he seems like. reading the story, like, I'm like, did they bury the lead? Like, where's the part where he's going to get shot? He meant, like, got a shot at the camp, not got shot at the camp. That was Poorly phrased. That'll end up in a college journalism class someday. Also nonsensical, misdirection runs. Please stop. What you're doing is you're giving the defense an extra second and a half to penetrate. The Bills tried that last night, and it just ended in a loss of one. And then Chris Broussard, we can all talk about momentarily, but I want to hear what you guys have to say.
So mine is pretty, I don't know, it's pretty well-trodden territory just on the whole thing, but all the Vols fans who were, I guess I should disclose, I, you know, graduated from UT, all that, but the Vols fans who acted like they, like the Vols had just committed a war crime because they threw stuff on the field, I mean, y'all just got to go somewhere else. Like, this is the problem with being a bad SEC team for so long, is in the SEC, this happens. Like, it happened at Florida. It's happened at LSU. Like, it happens all the time. Ole Miss threw stuff on Tennessee's basketball, or, like, when they played Tennessee, they threw stuff on the basketball court. Like, this happens. Like, when you're a good team and you have a justifiable reason to be mad that you lost a game, yeah. Like, now, I don't condone throwing golf balls at Lane Kiffin. Having said that, he didn't seem too torn up about it. He, you know, he's making jokes about it, all that kind of stuff. The idea that he was getting pelted with golf balls, or that it was anything more than just one crazy guy who might have had a golf ball in his pocket who threw it, like, just calm down.
Yeah. The problem was it wasn't that there was any kind of danger. The problem was the mess they were creating, the disruption to the game, and the entitlement that they were all displaying. No one was in danger. There was no player safety problem. It was just, yeah, a grand display of entitlement that disrupted a game and cost the university a lot of money.
Yeah, like, it's half as much as if they would have stormed the field after. So, I mean, you know, don't throw stuff on the field. Like, I do actually not, I mean, that you shouldn't do that just because it's your own field. Like, why would you mess up your own field? It's a bad look. But at the same time, like, you know, display your anger. That, I've got no problem with that. Be mad if you want to be mad.
speaking of college football, my stop the nonsense is the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes, Manny Diaz. For those of you who don't know, because you probably don't care about Hurricanes football anymore because it's not the 1980s or 2001, the Hurricanes suck. So they lost to Bama by 31 week one. They barely beat Appalachian State. They lost to Michigan State by 21. They lost to Virginia. And then this week they lost to UNC when they had a chance to maybe get a field goal to tie or maybe a touchdown. And their quarterback's pass got batted in the air by a defensive lineman and it got picked to end the game. So anyway, Manny Diaz, after the game, he has had some terrible quotes this year, but this is the one that got me. We just can't find the play to get them to the victory that they deserve. There's a good team in that locker room. We don't have a good record. He's absolutely right. There is a good team in there because they have a lot of talented players, but they don't have a good record because the coach sucks. So it was pretty much just an indictment on himself. And he's pretty much telling on himself at this point. And I don't know how he's still the coach, but well, I kind of do because the president of the Miami, of the University of Miami doesn't like football and doesn't even care if they're good. So this was really just a venting session for a Canes fan.
All right. It's Chris Broussard time. My man went on FS1 Tuesday morning and said that the Bills won, or excuse me, the Bills lost because they couldn't overcome the travesty of losing their Pro Bowl left tackle, Taylor Lewan. What happened there? How does that happen?
I don't know. The funniest part was that, like, when he was starting to say that sentence, he started with, like, Tennessee, he was like about to say Tennessee left tackle Taylor Lewan,
but then he realized that
yes, if you go back in here, like he was about to say Tennessee, and then he just went along with his train of thought and just put Taylor Lewan on the Buffalo Bills. It's amazing, like it's the same as the Stephen A. Smith from a couple years ago with Hunter Henry, who was on IR. And he said, you got to watch out for him. And
yeah, but as we were talking about earlier, this is worse than that. At least Hunter Henry and Derek Williams played for those teams.
Do you think
Derek Johnson,
Huh? Yeah, do you think he was, like, starting to say that, and then he almost said Tennessee, and then in his head he's like, whew, dodged a bullet there. People would have really thought you were stupid to set up. And then he's like, his mouth just kept going, and he was like, wait, am I still talking? And he was like, huh? Why isn't anybody talking about that? And then he didn't hear what he said, and he was like, okay, I think that went fine.
You know what's bad? When I first saw the video when you sent it to us, Matthias, and then when I clicked on it, it had like a bunch of quote tweets, and I clicked on it, and the most recent quote tweet was from Jalen Ramsey. Like, yeah, it was the actual Jalen Ramsey account tweeting it.
Who is a big Taylor Lewan fan. They're friends. So yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like it's funny that it seems like if you work at ESPN, that you know, especially if they pay you a certain amount of money, that they feel like you need to know about every sport. Like that's not what people watch and want. Like people don't want guys to know a little bit about everything. They would like for people to know which players are on the same teams, but like just let your guys be focused on. You know, if you're going to focus on basketball, focus on basketball. If you're going to focus on baseball, focus on baseball. But, like, I don't need Pierre LeBron or whatever his name is, the guy who does all the hockey stuff. I don't need him telling me about the backup guard for the Titans. Like, I don't need any of that stuff. So, like, just let your guys be specialized and really good at one thing. They don't all have to be able to say a little bit incorrectly about a bunch of things. It's crazy.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And as Will Compton pointed out on Twitter, Broussard was so confident. Like, he was saying it as if he had just, like, solved this great mystery. Or, like I think one of you said, it was like, you know what nobody else is talking about? Like,
it's like he discovered something. Like, he was like, I can't believe it. I'm the only one who said this. Like, he searched, like, Taylor Lewan, Josh Allen run. And then it's like he realized that, like, nobody else had said it. And he was like, I'm about to drop this bombshell. And then everybody's like, that's the wrong team, you moron.
So bad. So bad. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Fun game. Fun recap. We'll be back next week after what should be another fun game between the Titans and the Kansas City Chiefs with quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Always fun to watch him play. Until then, for Will and Matias, I'm Luke, reminding you and everyone else in the sports world to stop the nonsense.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.